going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Ant and Big Red vs. the World. As always, I'm Big Red.
And as always, I'm Average Ant.
And we got a pretty special show for you today. Lots of great content and also something a little unique for us. Ant, you want to get into the episode and maybe introduce someone?
Yeah, I might introduce someone. So today we got a special guest. I guess before getting to that special guest, today on the menu, we got some NBA talk. We got the biggest threats, we think, to the Warriors. And of course, we got to talk about the NFL, the crazy free agency, and trades and such going down. But with that said, this guest was a former Shoreline Finn, a former member of the sweatshirt squad with me on the bench first year, current Jamestown Jimmy, former roommate, current friend, Cameron Martin. Cam, tell the people about yourself.
All right, I appreciate you guys having me on. I want to congratulate you guys on the continued success of the show. And yeah, I look forward to chatting up some sports today. And I miss you guys.
We miss you too.
Yeah, dude, I guess we miss you, bro. no, it's great to have you on, Cam. As Ant mentioned, former Shoreline Finn, might as well just call him what he is, Shoreline Goat. Right up there with the likes of the David Beckers of the world.
I'm honored.
Dude's, for sure.
Dude's an absolute legend. Got to take him back one-on-one on the court one of these days. You know, it'll happen. We miss you too, bro. So without further ado, though, let's dive right into the show. We'll get into some of this NFL kind of crazy free agency trades. Lots of stuff has been happening. So there's a ton of stuff to talk about here. Ant, you kind of want to take it away?
Yeah, so since I'm taking it away, we'll start with my team, of course, which is the Oakland Raiders, soon to be Las Vegas Raiders, unfortunately. But Antonio Brown, we got him. We got him, guys. but we traded for Antonio Brown, which for, I believe, a third and fifth round pick, which is just a complete finesse. I feel like the Steelers could have held out longer, got at least a first rounder for AB, but that's besides the point. So I guess kind of my biggest question for you guys is, how do you feel about this? And does this mean that the Raiders are still kind of in their tanking and rebuilding mode, or are they now kind of entering a more win now mode with now $40+ million in cap tied up between their quarterback and number one receiver duo?
I think it's obviously it's a great trade. I mean, a third and a fifth round pick for arguably the best receiver in the league. Like you can't really turn that away. I think it puts him in an interesting position though, after basically Gruden stripped the whole roster last year and it was kind of like, oh, here we go, full rebuild tank mode. But now you pick up AB, and there's another signing we'll talk about here in a minute that's also kind of win-now move. So, I mean, at the very least, it makes things really interesting. It's either Gruden feels like he can still build a championship contender around Derek Carr, or there's something else where the Raiders kind of feel they have the ability to acquire their future franchise quarterback pretty soon. But either way, can't go wrong here for the Raiders. A fantastic deal.
Yeah, you know, I'd agree with that. I think they gave up a very limited amount of picks for what they got. I mean, AB in the last six seasons, he's had 100+ receptions, and seven out of his last eight seasons, 1,000+ yards. And if you got a guy like Derek Carr throwing to him, I mean, he can do the same kind of thing that he did with Ben Roethlisberger throwing to him. And I feel like, you know, I feel like it puts them in more of a win now stage, but I don't know how far it'll get them exactly this year. I mean, that's definitely a huge piece of the puzzle, but I still think they're probably about another year or two out. Just need to figure out some stuff on the defensive side and maybe get their running game going a little bit, and they'll just have a pretty explosive offense, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. I guess my only kind of negative about this trade, if you want to call it a negative, is like the timetable it's kind of on, because Antonio Brown is 30, isn't he? And
yep.
So adding a receiver that's 30 with a quarterback who's still young and hasn't really developed into convincingly developed into what you want him to be. And like Jake mentioned the whole stripping of the roster, so it's just a really awkward timetable. And I guess we'll kind of find out what the Raiders are doing draft night, whether they go and draft a defensive player or draft Kyler Murray, trade up to get him or whatever. So I guess we'll kind of find out there. And then maybe they could even enter a sort of win now with Kyler Murray if they're able to trade Derek Carr for some more defensive pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like I said, and just kind of like we're all alluding to, is it's a dependent move. It's definitely a positive and a move that makes your team better. But I think the big question is, what are we going to do about the defense? And is Derek Carr your franchise QB? I mean, up to this point, he's shown flashes, but he's also shown flashes of being in kind of Alex Smith that's afraid to throw the ball downfield. He'll have the best weapons he's had in Oakland and since he's been there, really. I mean, you add AB, you get way better. So it's, I mean, if he can step up and be the kind of guy you want him to be, then the Raiders are right back in contention. But it overall, it'll be interesting to see. And I mean, I think another piece I guess I'll just jump right into is the 6'8", 380-pound lineman, left tackle, who's going to be protecting Derek Carr's blind side for now. Another big signing for the Raiders that is, again, kind of a win now move.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because they're making a bunch of win now moves after coming off of a 5-year project kind of teardown moves that they went through last year and all that with trading Amari Cooper and all the other moves that they made. I guess one thing real quick again about Antonio Brown is I don't know how much his age is a concern since he is 30, but Randy Moss had arguably his best stretch of his career in New England when he was 30 plus. I mean, obviously, you have to credit some of that to having Tom Brady as your quarterback, and by no means is Derek Carr Tom Brady, but it does show that a receiver can be elite still after the age of 30. And I mean, Antonio Brown kind of sat out a couple games, so I mean, obviously he has some sort of rest, I guess, if you want to call it, but I mean, it is a couple games, so I guess we'll watch out for that.
Yeah, I guess last thing I want to say too is you mentioned Amari Cooper. Raiders traded Amari Cooper for a first rounder.
Yeah.
They got a first round pick for Amari Cooper, and they brought in Antonio Brown for a third and a fifth. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Amari Cooper went for a first, and you get a dude that's been largely considered the best receiver in football for the last few years for a third and a fifth. If the Raiders look good, Gruden comes out of this looking like just an absolute genius.
Yeah, I know. I wonder how much John Gruden is actually like in cahoots behind the scenes with all these moves going down. I'm just wondering like how much he's involved with those.
Hopefully a lot.
Yeah,
coach has a good say in the players they're bringing in.
Yeah, so I guess from one wide receiver to another, another guy that you could kind of consider the best receiver in the league to a degree. I know I saw Mr. Martin over here talking on the TL about it, so I'll let him introduce this other wide receiver.
Yeah, well, the Giants recently sent OBJ to the Browns for a first round and a third round?
And round and their second of the Browns' 2 third-round picks.
Yeah, and then Jabril Peppers. Obviously a tough move for the Giants. I mean, that's a huge player that you're sending away. I think that it just shows that they're going to be definitely in a rebuilding territory. I mean, they kind of have been, but they're probably going to be looking to build around Saquon and whoever they draft this year. For me, it's looking like probably Dwayne Haskins, unless they can trade up for Kyler Murray. But I think that's an okay move in terms of that. I mean, a rebuild is definitely necessary out there. It's been a few years since they've had the success that they want. And then on the Cleveland side, I just think that it's a huge win for them. You get Jarvis Landry back with OBJ. That's excitement on the field. That's excitement for the city. I just think it's, you know, it brings a lot of good things to Cleveland. And Baker Mayfield throwing them the ball. I just think that they're going to have a fun team to watch. And I think they might make some differences out there in their division this year.
Yeah, 100%. I actually, on the Browns' perspective, I freaking love the trade. I mean, Odell Beckham is 26 years old and under contract for the next 5 seasons for an annual value of about $14.5 million. That's unreal. It's Odell Beckham. Like, I know he's had health concerns, but that's about it. Like, other than his health, Odell Beckham's clearly a top 3 receiver, not the best receiver in the league. And so, I mean, you add him to a Browns roster that on offense now has Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham, and Jarvis Landry. It's kind of scary, and I love Baker Mayfield. I think he's going to have a phenomenal year. And so, I mean, offensively, they're nothing but dubs for the Browns. I mean, they had to give up a first-round pick. Yeah, you kind of have to, but, I mean, you're bringing in a player that you couldn't dream of drafting in the first round, let alone at the 17th overall. And then they had to give up their second of their 2 third-round picks. So, I mean, I don't know what happened to drive down the receiver market, but, I mean, it's crazy. You had, like, a guy like Golden Tate get traded for a third-round pick last year, Amari for a first. I mean, and then you see AB and Odell go for kind of the packages that they did. So, I mean, big time win for the Giants, or for the Browns. Big time loss for the Giants, in my opinion. Really confusing move. I know that Giants president said that nobody was untouchable and he didn't know if OBJ would be on the team or not. But dude's 26 years old and under contract for 5 more years at very reasonable $14.5 million. And the pairing with him and Saquon makes the transition for any young QB way easier. I mean, now the Giants are kind of going in with their number one receiver as Sterling Shepard. I know you get Jabril Peppers, and that's solid, I guess. But overall, kind of confusing move for the Giants. I'm not sure why they pulled the trigger so soon. Like, You can't tell me you couldn't find a better package for Odell Beckham. Like, I'm sorry, even with his semi off field stuff.
Yeah, I guess real quick, shout out to the Jabril Peppers, Michigan alum. But I mean, I completely agree with you on the Giants half. They definitely could have waited a little longer. I mean, I feel like this kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I think I saw the Bleacher Report post on Instagram, and I was like, huh? Like, because I knew that he was like on the market and stuff, but I mean, I wasn't expecting anything this fast and to that package. I mean, you could have at least got 2 first rounders for Odell. I mean,
I think that's what everybody thought like was required too. And I mean, it's like, at least with the Steelers, like Antonio Brown basically was forced in their hand. Like, he was pretty much like, hey, I don't want to play here. Trade me. I don't really care where. Like just get me out of here. Somebody wants to pay me and wants to play me. Like, so, I mean, the Steelers were semi-forced. The Giants, I don't, like, were they holding themselves at gunpoint? Or
they must have been. They must have been, because that's the only thing that makes sense and why they would agree to this deal, honestly. Unless behind the scenes, Odell is just forcing his hand or something like that. But, I mean, I can't really see that, especially when you're under contract for as many years as he is. But, yeah, super weird.
Well, he got his extension. Yeah. Like, that's what he wanted, was his extension. And he forced his hand for the extension. The Giants didn't want to do it. And then they did it. And they did, like, a fairly team-friendly extension for the caliber of player he is. And so, I mean, and I think if Odell was seriously requesting a trade, we'd know about it.
Yeah.
Odell wouldn't keep quiet about it. Like,
yeah. I don't know. Maybe we have to ask Blake Snell. He probably knows. the things that kind of that bothers me the most, though, about like the Giants half of the trade is what you mentioned with the pairing of Saquon and Odell and how easy that would make it for Dwayne Haskins to come in and develop. I mean, it slows down their rebuild. I mean, OBJ could have been a huge part of your rebuild, and it's weird. I mean, like you said, Jabril Peppers is no scrub. First round pick is all right, but you could have got a lot more. So, I mean, I don't know what the Giants are doing. And for the Browns, obviously this is a huge win for them. Didn't give up much at all. They will have to replace Jabril Peppers, but I mean, if I had to take my pick on having Odell on offense or Jabril on defense, I'm definitely taking Odell. But I guess the kind of question coming out of this is the Browns offense the best in the league now with Baker and Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, Jarvis Landry and Odell and all those guys? Do you guys think they're the best offense in the league now?
I mean, at right now, they're definitely the most exciting. I think it's difficult to dub a second-year like an offense that's being led by a second-year quarterback as the best in football, and I think that's a recipe for disaster in Cleveland. That's kind of like the dream team talks of Philly when they signed Vince Young back in the day. But either way, I mean, I mentioned it earlier, the amount of weapons they have. My goodness. Like the accuracy, deep ball accuracy, too, that Baker Mayfield has to Odell, I mean, it's... Baker's going to be able to push the ball downfield in a way that Eli Manning hasn't been able to do for years. And so in that regard, it has the potential. I would say it has the potential to be the best, one of the best offenses in football. I just kind of want to wait and see how Baker does year two.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that obviously on paper, they have very explosive weapons. They also have David Njoku, you know, a tight end who's somebody that's going to get, you know, receive great benefits by the addition of Odell. I just honestly, part of me thinks that it also comes down to coaching. I mean, obviously, we all know that the Browns have had, you know, trouble on the coaching front the last few years. I mean, you know, last probably 15 years or so, even more than that. And you know, if they get the right guy in there that meshes with Baker, meshes with Odell, Jarvis Landry, guys like that, you know, I think that their potential is pretty high. I'd say they're up there within the top offenses in the NFL for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree that the only thing kind of holding everybody back from just crowning them straight up the best offense in the league is Baker Mayfield and how young he is. I mean, second year quarterback. No, not saying he's bad by any stretch of the imagination, because he did just set the rookie touchdown record. But he's a second year player, so it's hard to kind of put your money on a second-year player, especially a quarterback.
But I would say if you're going to make bets that kind of have like an off chance, the Browns would be the team to bet on. Yeah. I mean, if you're going for that big payout for a random Super Bowl contender, it's the Browns for sure.
Yeah. What do you guys think like their chances are? Because their chances, obviously, of getting to the Super Bowl obviously rose a lot over the last couple of days. So, do you guys think that's realistic at all, or like, what do you see kind of their ceiling for the end of the season?
I absolutely see them as a playoff team. I think the Browns are a playoff team now, assuming we get more second-year development from Baker Mayfield, avoids a sophomore slump. I see them as a playoff team easily. I think they have a little bit to go, a little bit to prove before I can say that they're better than the Patriots. Definitely not better than Patriots, but before I can say they're better than the Chiefs, or before I can say they're better than the Ravens. The Ravens, which we'll talk about in a minute here, I think added a lot of great pieces so far through free agency. And the Pats are the Pats. They're always going to be legit. And on top of that, the Chiefs are coming off MVP season from Mahomes, a kind of season we haven't seen from a quarterback in a long time. So, I mean, there's obstacles in the AFC for sure, but the Browns have kind of asserted themselves as contenders. I mean, they're here to compete, so I'm excited for their season and just how the whole AFC is going to play out in general. We might actually have some legit competition going in here with several teams that have a legitimate shot at the championship.
Yeah, I'd say you know, it's hard to see them not getting to the playoffs with the additions that they made, and in my opinion, Baker Mayfield's just a flat out winner. He's a great quarterback. He won at Oklahoma. But I think they're still a little bit away from getting to the Super Bowl. I mean, they just have, like Jake said, such tough competition in their conference. I mean, that you got the Chiefs, the Ravens are good, the Chargers are good, the Patriots are always there. I mean, I just think it's hard. It's going to be hard for them to find themselves getting to the Super Bowl. I think they can get deep in the playoffs, but I think there's going to be some roadblocks around for a couple years before they can actually consider themselves.
I just want to add in, I just want to shout out the Colts too. I didn't mention them. The Colts are a very good young defensive team with Andrew Luck at quarterback, so they're always a factor. So, I mean, it's
absolutely
not to say that I'm discrediting anything the Browns are or can do, but I mean, like Cam said, there's a lot of competition in the AFC, and I mean, you have great quarterbacks like Mahomes, hopefully the emergence of Lamar Jackson as a thrower and a runner, and you still got Tom Brady to deal with, so a lot of talent in the AFC.
Yeah, for sure. I think ideally, obviously they want to win the division, but I'd take a wild card berth if I'm the Browns, and hopefully a win in the playoffs. I'm not expecting them to go on any sort of deep run. Obviously, it's Baker's second year and all that, but getting to the playoffs, definitely. I don't necessarily think it has to happen, but to a degree, it kind of does. But it'll be, yeah. I don't see them dethroning the Patriots or even the Chiefs or anything, but it'll be an interesting season over there in Cleveland for the football team this time. We're not watching basketball in Cleveland.
Yeah, it'll definitely be fun to watch one way or the other. Moving on from the Browns, we'll dive into one of those contenders that we were talking about, the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, overall, they kind of had just a fan. Like, so far, I feel like they've had a fantastic free agency. Just recently brought in Earl Thomas. I think yesterday the deal was completed. And another deal that I want to get into a little bit is they also signed Mark Ingram. So, I mean, you bring in a guy that's a premier safety at the league, arguably the best in the position when healthy, and you bring in a fantastic running back. And Ann or Cam, you kind of take it away on either of those guys, get into it a little bit.
Yeah, real quick, I just want to shout out Earl Thomas for getting his bag. I really like him and the Ravens matchup and how they link up together, I guess. I mean, I'm obviously not Ed Reed 2.0, possibly, actually, but it'll be dope watching him in a Ravens uniform. I guess what I said when we were talking about the Ravens a while back, we both kind of agreed that they just need to keep building on their offense and developing on their defense and developing Lamar Jackson. And the moves that they've done up to this point have done exactly that, with signing Earl Thomas and then adding some offensive pieces that we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah, I think the Ravens definitely got real better in the matter of a day. You know, they picked up Earl Thomas, who for me is one of my favorite defensive players to watch and has been for years. I think it was definitely time for him to get out of Seattle. And I think it's, you know, his intensity coming back this season off, you know, after the injury, I think he's just going to be fired up. I think he's going to be a great defensive addition for the Ravens. And then Mark Ingram, the Ravens made Alex Collins, a guy that got cut by the Hawks a few years back, into a good running back for him. And I think that, you know, Mark Ingram's already there. He already has the tools. And I think that he's just going to help, you know, help this offense reach its potential. And I maybe even go beyond. I just think it's going to open up a lot of opportunities for Lamar Jackson and in the throwing lanes and the passing lanes. So I think it's definitely two good pickups for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the overall contract details for each: Earl Thomas, 4 years, $55 million, with $32 million guaranteed, making him the third highest paid safety in the league, which I'm sure Earl would like to be the highest paid. But when you come off two leg injuries in 3 years, I mean, you got to settle a little bit. But like Ant said, he secured his bag. He got that $32 million guaranteed that he was looking for. Unfortunately, just too steep of a price for the Hawks, with Frank Clark's extension coming up, Bobby Wagner needing one as well, and Russell Wilson. So, I mean, it was just a price that was just a little bit too steep for them. And so, I mean, I think sad to see him leave Seattle and the complete end of the Legion of Boom era, but excellent pickup for Baltimore. I mean, you're adding arguably the best safety in the league to what was the best defense in the league last year. You could talk about the Bears a little bit, and I would argue the Bears maybe were a little bit better than the Ravens, but either way, Ravens are number two defense in the league last year, if not number one. I mean, they were the number one scoring. And you add a player of Earl Thomas's caliber, huge in that regard for defense. And plus, Earl Thomas has that Super Bowl experience that they lost a little bit. And I mean, they let CJ Mosley walk, and that's okay when you bring in a guy of Earl's caliber. So big time move there. And then Mark Ingram, deal I love. 3 years, $15 million. Not a ton of financial commitment, really. But you're bringing in a dude that's averaged 4.8 yards per carry, had 3,581 yards and 30 rushing touchdowns over the past four seasons, and is also no slouch in the passing game, as Cam kind of mentioned, with 175 catches and just over 1,300 yards in that same span. So upgrades on offense and defense, and if the Ravens want to stick with that ground-and-pound running style they had with Lamar Jackson at the helm, Mark Ingram is the perfect guy to do that, and now the Ravens finally have a kind of a dual-threat running back, as well as still having Gus Edwards and some other young guys on the roster.
Yeah, exactly. Adding Mark Ingram kind of gives the Ravens the blueprint of like the 1-2 running back punch that we see on a lot of successful teams like the Rams and all that, and the Saints before the Ravens just signed Mark Ingram. But it's really good for their offense. I mean, with a dual threat quarterback like Lamar Jackson, something I kind of want to see is some options. I'm trying to see some option plays getting ran or something like that, like back in the old days on like NCAA 06. But it's a great move. I mean, dual threat quarterback and running back. It's going to be a great offense. Hopefully is what we're hoping for. So we'll see some more. Hopefully we'll see some more passing developments by Lamar Jackson, because we all know he could get done on the ground. So the only thing he needs to do is just develop his passing to be a little bit more serviceable. But I mean, he showed strides of that last year for sure.
Yeah, and so stock's looking up for the Ravens. Very exciting, at least for them. And I want to see Lamar do well. So Ravens will be a fun team to watch this year. We'll kind of move around. Just a couple more contracts I want to kind of shout out. One of which I think Ant might have a little more detail on some safeties and things. But I just want to talk about Landon Collins getting 6 years, $84 million, $14 million annually. First of all, it's a massive contract. Second of all, I don't think Landon Collins is that good. For this guy to be getting paid more than Earl Thomas, and on top of that, a six-year deal, like, you don't see that in the NFL. You're going to give a guy a six-year deal. That's, you give your quarterback a six-year deal. You know, it was interesting. I mean, yes, you bring in a starting caliber safety, and Landon Collins is a fantastic run defender, but paying $14 million annually for a fairly one-dimensional safety, kind of a head-scratcher. And on top of that, I don't necessarily see what the Redskins' plan is either. I mean, right now you lost Alex Smith and may never play football again. So, I mean, where's your franchise QB? Where, like, what's your level of competition?
They have Case Keenum, dude.
Yeah, okay. try and tell me that Case Keenum is the next Nick Foles, bro, and I will laugh in your face, though.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Landon Collins getting 6 years is ridiculous. Not because he's like any slouch or anything, but just because you don't really give defensive players a 6 year contract, and to make him the highest paid safety in the league over a guy like Earl Thomas, who has proved that he is the best safety in the league, it's a little silly. So I mean, I'm not going to be here for the Landon Collins bashing sesh. He is a serviceable player, to say the least, but definitely agree that 6 years, $84 million, highest paid safety in the league, and a good look on that for the Redskins anyway. It's a good look for Landon Collins, but
yeah, I mean, shout out Landon Collins for securing the bag, I guess, but way to swindle the Redskins.
I guess since we just talked about a safety, I'll get into the safeties of this year's free agency class. Safeties have done a really good job at securing the bag this week. Obviously, we talked about Earl Thomas getting 4 years, $55 million, with 32 of it guaranteed. Tyrann Mathieu got 3 years, $42 million with the Chiefs. Eric Weddle, to a lesser degree, he got around $6 million a year, but 2 years, $12.5 million with the Rams. LaMarcus Joyner, 4 years, $42 million with the Raiders. And of course, the infamous Landon Collins that we just talked about, with 6 years, $84 million from the Redskins. It's interesting to see safeties of all defensive position players getting these big contracts. I mean, you kind of save that kind of money for corners and DNs and all that, pass rushers. But I mean, I guess shout out to the safeties for getting that bag.
Yeah, a lot of money for safeties this offseason. Some people were kind of concerned it would drive Earl Thomas's value down a little bit, but overall, I think just in general, the safety market has now viewed and developed into a position that has a ton of value, and guys are getting paid for it. So, I mean, shout out anytime an NFL player can secure the bag. I mean, you always feel good for him, yeah, just because of the way the NFL is. I mean, guys don't last that long, and so high guarantees and big contracts, it's good for the players. Good to see them getting the recognition and respect that they deserve. A lot of those deals, I mean, we're just going to have to kind of wait and see how they turn out. I mean, it's a lot of big names, Eric Weddle in particular on the Rams. But again, just kind of like my concerns with the Landon Collins deal, it's, were you paying for the name or are you paying for their actual talent? So we'll kind of have to break it down and see. Not that I'm disrespecting any of the talent of these players, especially not Eric Weddle, but when you're handing out that kind of money, that's always a question that's going to come with it is, can they live up to it?
Yeah, and I mean, with the Redskins, I mean, no one else is going to sign with the Redskins if I'm keeping it real with you, Chief. So I guess they had a lot of money to spend. So I guess Landon Collins was a beneficiary of that.
Might as well spend it. I guess kind of moving on, though, this is the last guy that I want to mention. And, I mean, you know, we can't talk football, can't talk free agency without the GOAT Nick Foles coming up. Talk about securing the bag. My dude Nick Foles secured the bag, bro. Took the Eagles to the Super Bowl championship, outplayed Tom Brady, then carried them to the playoffs. Dude is phenomenal. Got a four-year, $88 million deal with Jacksonville, $50 million guaranteed, and an additional $14 million worth of incentives. So, I mean, Nick Foles got paid, got that $50 million guaranteed, went from backup to franchise QB, the snap of the fingers. So, I mean, Nick Foles has never succeeded really outside of Philadelphia. Bringing along his QB coach is a nice addition there. So, I mean, we'll have to see how the deal kind of plays out. I'm hoping Nick Foles plays well. I'm not necessarily expecting him to be world beater level, carry him to the playoffs or anything. But if Jacksonville's defense can, I mean, they were top 10 last year. So, I mean, if they're anywhere near what they were a couple years ago when Blake frickin' Bortles almost took him to the Super Bowl. I mean, come on, dude. I'm taking Nick Foles in the playoffs every time over Blake Bortles. I'm taking Nick Foles over Blake Bortles in a pickup game, in a competition to see who throws further. I'm taking Nick Foles every time.
Well, yeah, that's because Blake Bortles can only throw like 15 yards max. So. no disrespect to Blake Bortles, though. Great.
Oh, no. all disrespect to Blake Bortles, bro. We can disrespect this man, dude. He secured the bag last year after
Yeah, I mean, the Jaguars definitely dropped the ball. Should have just let him walk. They ended up cutting him anyway. So, I mean, that's kind of funny. But, yeah, shout out Nick Foles. I mean, he's... it's kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of thing because, like you said, his only success has came in Philadelphia, and it was as the backup coming in where there wasn't really expectation for him to do anything. But now that he's getting the bag and he's going to be the starting quarterback, he's going to have expectations. I mean, yeah, the Super Bowl run was really nice. I mean, nothing but respect to him for that. I mean, I was a huge Nick Foles supporter at that time. I guess still am to a degree, not as much as you, but I was definitely pulling for the Eagles and Nick Foles during that Super Bowl run. But I don't know. I just feel like it's different now because he is a starting quarterback. He has expectations. He's going to be expected to lead a team. Hopefully the Jaguars defense can regain its Saxonville form, like you mentioned. And that'll be huge for Nick Foles kind of getting comfortable and being able to relax and just do Nick Foles things, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you guys both said. Take Nick Foles over Blake Bortles any day of the week. I mean,
yeah.
Nick Foles is a good guy to have in the organization. I mean, he showed it last year. He took him to a Super Bowl, and Carson Wentz gets healthy, and he waits his turn again, and he gets his opportunity, and he does what he has to do with it. I mean, I think that if he has the right pieces around him, he can succeed. I think when he went to the Rams a few years back, after leaving Philadelphia the first time, I think he was just a little young, and the Rams weren't that well coached back then. I think that he has an opportunity to come into Jacksonville and do some great things, especially knowing that he is their guy. I mean, that'll build his confidence. I think he'll just kind of take it and run with it. And like you guys said, if their defense gets to that, you know, 2016, 2017 defense, they'll do good things. So 2018, I should say.
Yeah, either way, I'm excited for Nick Foles. Glad he got paid. He deserved it. And hopefully he can kind of continue some of that success that he had there in Philly and showed that he is a viable quarterback that can compete for a championship. So, I mean, with that said, that's kind of all I got on NFL's. Cam, anything else you wanted to mention or Ant?
Nope.
I'm good.
All right. And so with that, then we will move on to kind of one of the more exciting segments, at least one that I'm pretty excited about. As we're in the heat of the NBA season, the contenders are showing up and showing out, getting ready for this playoff stretch run. And with every playoff stretch run in the NBA the last 5 years or so, the big question is, who can beat the Warriors? Is there anyone that can beat the Warriors? And so with that in mind, Average Ant and I wanted to put together a segment that's just kind of about who are the biggest threats to the Warriors. And so with that, we're kind of going to go through our rankings here, and Cam will give his pieces and insight here and there. But yeah, it's going to be an exciting segment, and I'm looking forward to it. So Ant, I guess you can kind of take it away.
Yeah, so I guess before we kind of kick off the list, I guess honorable mention to the Nuggets. They are the 2 seed right now, but me and a lot of people, Big Red included, don't see the Nuggets doing anything big in the playoffs. So just honorable mention to them. They are a fun team to watch. I like the Joker. I like Jamal Murray and all them, but they still have some defense to figure out. But with that being said, I guess I'll get into my number 6 team, which is the Boston Celtics, unfortunately. I did want to put them higher. If we were doing this list at the beginning of the season, they probably would have been around number 2 spot, number 3. But just because of how out of sync they've been this season, I don't know how much I could trust them. I mean, I'm hoping they figure it out in the playoffs and get it going and regain their playoff form from last year, but with the addition of Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. But until that happens, I don't know how much I can really trust them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the Celtics are a team that I had as high as 3 when I was first trying out my list, and as low as 6, kind of exactly like you did. I mean, it's you look at that roster, and the Celtics are one of the few teams in the NBA that you could look at their starting 5 and their first 3 guys off the bench, honestly, and just kind of be like, okay, this is a team that has the star power and talent to match Golden State. I mean, it's teeming with potential. Jason Tatum, Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier. I mean, those are all dudes that have had playoff experience, done well in the playoffs. Unfortunately, it just hasn't really come together. I mean, you've struggled with some health, Kyrie included. Gordon Hayward coming back from that gruesome injury, it's obviously taken him some time to get adjusted and acclimated. So, I mean, just it really hasn't come together the way the Celtics have kind of envisioned. And to that end, they're sitting down at a 5 seed. So, I mean, yeah, the Celtics, they've definitely got the potential. They're not my 6th team, though. My 6th ranked team is the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think Ant's got them a little bit higher. I'm not quite sure. We'll get to it, but currently tied with Houston for the 3 seed, just a few games behind the Nuggets and, I think 4 behind the Warriors for the 1 seed. I mean, not catching the Warriors, but and even the honorable mention Nuggets are questionable if you could catch them just cause they are playing well. I mean, their offense is legit. But for me, I got the Thunder down at 6. Mostly I have them on this list just out of respect for the level that Paul George is playing at this season. I mean, absolutely phenomenal. He's played his way into an MVP race that includes the number 1-seeded Bucks, Giannis, who's basically trying to unseat LeBron or KD as best player in basketball. And on top of that, sorry, I just kind of lost my train of thought. You have Paul George, who's worked his way into the MVP conversation with a guy like Giannis, and on top of that, James Harden, who's averaging 36 plus points per game. And to be in the MVP conversation with other seasons like that going on around you is phenomenal. And Paul George has absolutely played like that. He's also in the Defensive Player of the Year running as well. So, I mean, you have an elite level two-way player, and you also have an elite player in Russell Westbrook. And on top of that, the Thunder have one of the best defenses in the league. And a lot of length to cover the Warriors with guys like Terrence Ferguson and Jeremy Grant, and that anchor in the middle of Steven Adams. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to like. Defensively, that's really the best you could hope for, at least in my mind, in a matchup with the Warriors, is that the Thunder put the clamps on and avoid offensive stagnation. To me, I don't think that they'll be able to do that. I think the Warriors have just too much talent and too much offense to constantly throw at the Thunder defense, and that's why they're in my 6th spot. Unless we have an elite pairing of Paul George and Russell Westbrook in that matchup, I don't really see the Thunder having too much of a realistic shot at beating the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get into the Thunder in a second because I do have them next on my list, but let's buzz over to Cam and let's see if he has a list put together, who he is at the sixth spot.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of similar with you guys. I got my five and six as both of those teams, but I put OKC at six. I mean, I think that this year is their best shot since losing KD for sure. I mean, they definitely have a little more depth than they have in recent years. I think like you said, Jake, Paul George is just playing at such an elite level. It's unreal to have to keep up with the MVP conversation the way that it is. And I think what it comes down to, me picking Boston over OKC, I just think that Boston is a really well coached team with Brad Stevens at the helm. And I think it's been hard for them. You know, I think they'd be, like you said, a lot higher on this list. But there's been a little bit of underperformance by them. You know, on paper they got great guys. They're young guys, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, guys like that are guys that are going to be great for them. But I think that this year it's just been slow. I don't think they've gelled the way that everybody expected them to, and the way they expected to. And I think it's going to kind of cost them the playoffs running into teams that they will in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've all kind of been on the Celtics are eventually going to figure it out in the playoffs wagon. But I mean, they've been really, really out of sync lately. So I mean, as time goes on, that looks less and less likely. So I mean, from the Celtics, I'll get into my number five, which is a team that we just talked about, which is the Oklahoma City Thunder. This was also a team I wanted to put higher because it's not the Thunder of Thunder past. Speaking of last year and to a degree when it was Russ and KD, the key difference to me for the Thunder is that Russ he's let PG take over. That's something that's always been in Russ's way, is his alpha mentality. I mean, although he still has it, it's like taken over. He has taken over his alpha personality to the point where it loses the Thunder games. I mean, we saw that a lot when he was with KD, but he's taken a backseat to Paul George, who is at MVP type levels this year. And aside from last year, where Paul George just obviously gave up on the Thunder for some reason and then decided to come back, he's shown up in the playoffs. I mean, he's had battles with LeBron and all that. He's been close to knocking off LeBron's Heat, although nobody really expected the Pacers to win or anything. He took them to seven games once or twice. But so Paul George, he's known to show up in the playoffs. I mean, Playoff P, he didn't get that name for no reason. I mean, a lot of people kind of have the narrative in their heads that he's a choker and that he's a quitter. But I mean, it was just one playoff series. So that's what the separating factor for me from the Thunder and the Celtics is, that like, I know Kyrie is on the Celtics, but I don't think he could carry a team as well as Paul George can, especially at the level that Paul George is playing at right now.
Yeah, and I completely understand that. I mean, Kyrie absolutely does show up in the playoffs, but he's at the point guard. His main impact is scoring the basketball, and Paul George can impact on both ends of the floor. So, I mean, that's at the small forward position, that's a guy that can carry your roster. And so I do have a lot of respect for the Thunder, but again, I just don't really think that they're all that much of a threat to the Warriors. And the Celtics, I mean, I won't say too much more on them just because we kind of touched on them a little bit. Everything can change in the playoffs. Yeah. When we get to the playoffs, the Celtics aren't worried about seeding. The Celtics, it's unfortunate that there has been a little bit of turmoil and just an obvious like failure to mesh for some of their bigger pieces. But things can change in the playoffs, and you get a few guys hot in the playoffs when a lot of those Celtics have playoff experience. So that's definitely going to play a big factor. So I got the Celtics at my five spot just because I believe in the potential of their lineup in the playoffs as giving the Warriors more fits. It's more of a matchup thing here for me. I mean, the Thunder are the better team right now, and if I had to go Thunder versus Celtics matchup, I would say maybe the Thunder would probably beat the Celtics, but that's not what we're talking about. And to me, the Celtics have better pieces to beat the Warriors than the Thunder do, even though they're not perfectly meshed together right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Thunder have had a decent history of playing against the Warriors in the regular season anyway. So That's also another kind of factor going into it. But with that being said, I guess we'll kind of move into the top four with the Thunder and Celtics out of the way. My number four ranked team for the threats to the Warriors is the Philadelphia 76ers. I know I asked a couple weeks ago after the Tobias Harris trade, are the 76ers now the biggest threat to the Warriors? And I've gone back a little bit on that. I mean, I guess I never really confirmed it, but I did ask the question. So I don't know. I believe next year they probably will be the biggest threat if they're able to keep the core that they have. But I just don't think this year is the year that they can challenge the Warriors if they get to that point.
Yeah, and here's kind of where I think the rest of me and Ant's rankings go in order. I was flip-flopping on the 76ers a lot. I had them as high as three, and just kind of as I was going my research, I ended up dropping them down to the four spot. That big four, it's prevalent. Embiid, Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, and Tobias Harris. The problem is we haven't really seen that big four on the court because Joel Embiid's been nursing a knee injury, and without Joel Embiid, kind of exactly like since Joel Embiid's been in the league and been a star, without Joel Embiid, the 76ers look like a mediocre team.
Yeah.
They don't look like a championship team. And that's, to me, that's crazy when you look at the rest of their roster with Jimmy Butler and Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris still there, even without Embiid. But it's just not there. That next level, contender level talent and play is not there without Embiid. And so that's obviously the biggest question. I mean, we could see Embiid get healthy down the last stretch of the season here, and then the 76ers go on a tear, and all of a sudden the 76ers might vault up to my two spot just because of the talent that they have. But right now we haven't seen Embiid. We don't really know the extent of Embiid's injury for his sore knee. That's pretty much seen him suit up for All-Star weekend, and that's about it in the last month.
Yeah, he played against the Pacers a couple days ago.
Did he?
Yeah. Okay. He went off for 30, I think, too.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, there we go. It's the exact, yeah,
and
exact
the, and they won, make, and they won and got up to the three seed, so that goes.
Yeah. And so with a healthy Embiid, that's something that we could start to see here. But as of right now, I can't. Yes, bringing in Tobias Harris on paper looks amazing. Their team looks amazing on paper right now. You said it a couple weeks ago. Are they the biggest threat to the Warriors? I mean, we thought maybe. We're still kind of in wait and see mode with the 76ers, or at least I am, because I want to see that healthy Embiid and that big four working together and hopefully become that dominant force that they are and challenge the teams and the rest of this list.
Yeah, I think, I think with the Sixers, it seems to be a common theme today, to me at least, that, you know, they're a young team. I mean, they got, you know, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid leading the way. I think Tobias Harris was a great addition for them. And I think they have really, really high potential. But I don't know how they stack with the Warriors and the Warriors' experience. The guys that they have, like 1 through 5, they have a team that just runs, you know, near flawlessly. I mean, it's unbelievable to watch those guys play. And the Sixers do have good matchups with them, I think. But I don't know if they're ready yet to be the contenders that are going to take the Warriors on head on.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that experience is a good thing that you mentioned. All these East teams won't see them until the Eastern or until the finals. So, I mean, they have to go through most of these teams on this list are Eastern Conference teams, save for a couple West teams. But these teams all have to get through each other. The Celtics have to get past the 76ers. The 76ers have to get past the Celtics and the Bucks and the Raptors. So, I mean, there's a lot of wear and tear that could go on through then before they finally have that Warriors matchup. And on top of that, whatever team faces them from the East is going to be a team that hasn't ever been to the finals to face a team of this caliber. So that plays a big role too. And I think kind of like both of you said, we are probably a year away, at least I think, from this being that number one threat, or again, see how the rest of the season plays out. But Sixers are definitely loaded with talent and fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one thing I will add real quick, the 76ers do have four all-star caliber players, but at this point in time, it resembles more of the Atlanta Hawks 60 win four All-Stars than the Warriors. No, just obviously better with Joel Embiid. I mean, I'd pick any of their four All-Star caliber players over any of the four that were on the Hawks. But yeah, that's that resembles more of that. I mean, like we all touched on, it's another year or two out from being contenders. They're serious contenders anyway.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Yep. So with that being said, it's top three time. We're in top three mode. So my third team is the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are honestly a team that if you had them at one or two, I wouldn't really be mad at you. I wouldn't necessarily argue it too much. The only reason I really have them at three is because we don't really know what to expect from Giannis. I mean, he's played one playoff series, I believe, which was last year against the Celtics, where he put up some decent stats, but he failed to take over like he should have. And I mean, this year he's obviously on a different level, most likely going to win MVP if he keeps up his pace. But we just don't know what to expect from him, in the playoffs and in the finals if they were to get there and obviously play against the Warriors. And another thing I'll add real quick is that playoff D tightens up. I mean, I know obviously Giannis hasn't been able to be stopped at all this season. You know where he's going every night. You know he's going to the paint every night. And I mean, since like every month too, his three-point shooting has gotten better and better, which is crazy. But playoff D tightens up. They'll keen in on trying to stop him more. So that's, I guess, my reasoning for having the Bucks at three instead of at one or two.
Yeah, and I also have the Bucks at three. The Bucks, like you said, you wouldn't be mad at number one. I also wouldn't be mad at number one, just because the level of player that Giannis is. He's one of the few teams, I think only, in my opinion, a little biased, only the Rockets have like legitimate star power. The Bucks and Rockets are the only team with like a legitimate superstar that can rival a KD and rival him in the playoffs. Now, I want to wait and see playoff Harden, but Giannis is in that top three player discussion. In that, is when is Giannis going to pass LeBron for the throne, or what, this, that, and whatever. And so I think that's always a factor. But for me, the roster depth is incredible, but rotations tighten up and defense tightens up in the playoffs. And so I think for me, I want to see, like you mentioned, I want to see Giannis take over in the playoffs. And I think that's what it's got to be for the Bucks to overcome even the Raptors in their conference and get to the finals. But if they do, I really like the Bucks' chances just because of the ridiculous amount of length on their roster with Giannis. And I mean, the one thing the Bucks have is elite two-way talent pretty much throughout their rosters. Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, and Giannis, I mean, can all play elite defense and score the basketball really, really well. Middleton's having a career year. So, I mean, tons of depth and arguably the best player in the league. So I love that. And the Bucks are the number one seed. So, I mean, they've passed all the eye tests up to this point. For me, again, kind of want to see what they do in the playoffs, because if Giannis doesn't show up, then this is just a mediocre Bucks team. Like, it's same story for some of these other rosters. If Giannis isn't playing at MVP, team-changing, team-carrying level, I don't know if the Bucks are ready to match the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, you guys both bring up some good points. Defense is definitely going to be tightening up during the playoffs. I think they are going to be knowing that Giannis is going to try and take over. And I think that's going to affect his play if he lets it. But I think that it'll open up lanes for other players. I think it'll allow him to drive and kick, stuff like that. Ultimately, I think it also comes down to the fact that his supporting players have to pick up the slack that he can't. I mean, he can't do everything. You know, he is one of the best players in the league, if not the best. And I just think that, you know, we've seen it before. One guy can't do it all. It's nearly impossible. And I think that you need to get those other guys involved like Eric Bledsoe, like Chris Middleton, stuff like that, in order to say that you can truly contend with the Warriors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing lastly shout out is the Bucks are really well coached. You mentioned that 60 win Hawks team. This is basically that 60 win Hawks team with way better players. And so that's something to keep in mind for sure, and definitely going to play a factor into the playoffs. But right now they're in my three spot.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess moving from three to two, I got the Raptors. Pretty sure Big Red has the Raptors. I want to say Cam has the Raptors. I don't know.
Yes, I do.
All right. So
I left Denver off my list.
All right. So the only thing I'll really say about the Raptors, because you can really apply pretty much everything we said about the Bucks to the Raptors, but the only thing that separates the Raptors from the Bucks, in my opinion, is Kawhi and Giannis. At this point in their careers, I'm going to put my money on Kawhi showing up in the playoffs as opposed to Giannis. That's really the key difference. I mean, they're both, I guess, Giannis is elite on both sides. Kawhi is really good on offense and elite on defense. But they're really well coached. Their rotation works really good for them. They got shooters everywhere. They're a really good team overall. So, I mean, like the Bucks, you could have the Bucks at two and the Raptors at three. I wouldn't be mad. The only separating factor is Kawhi and what we've seen from him in the past in the playoffs.
100%. Couldn't agree more. I mean, you talk about depth with the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, it's there and more with the Raptors. I mean, you'll have Marcus Gasol leading your second unit. I mean, defense is tightened up. It's really hard to account for a center that can pass the way Marc Gasol does and facilitate offense in the second unit. I mean, that's something that would play a huge factor in a matchup with the Warriors. And Kawhi Leonard, like you said, that's the exact same reason that I've got the Raptors above the Bucks. I mean, it's the exact same reason I immediately put the Raptors in to a one or two slot. I ended up putting him in my two slot in lieu of the team in front of him, which we'll get into in a second. But yeah, Kawhi Leonard is the robot, dude. I mean, he plays ridiculous defense and is able to carry an offense in the other end. But I mean, he's got the likes of Kyle Lowry to help him out. Serge Ibaka, Danny Green's having a great year. I mean, the amount of talent around him is fantastic. Really well coached, just like the Bucks. And so the biggest difference, like you said, is that Kawhi and Giannis separation. And while you may think Giannis is a better player in general, Kawhi has been a Finals MVP. Kawhi has taken teams to the Finals. I mean, yes, when he won his MVP, there's still the kind of big core of San Antonio. But at the same time, Kawhi Leonard stood out as the best player of that group. And I'm trusting Kawhi just in terms of championship experience and just overall ability for the Raptors to get there. I think it's finally time for the Raptors to make it. I think they do. And I think that they are a very, very big threat to the Warriors, at least the biggest in the Eastern Conference, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll start out by saying Kawhi is to me what James Harden is to Jake. I'm a huge Kawhi Leonard fan. I love the way he plays the game. I mean, so good on defense and you can score really well. I think he's been kind of the better DeMar DeRozan. DeMar DeRozan was great for the Raptors, but I think that playoff experience that Kawhi has is what's going to make them better than they were last year. I don't think you're going to see them fold in the playoffs the way they did. I think that they're a team that can really push the Warriors and push everybody in the East. Cause I think that they have, good guys all around. So.
Yeah. I mean, the Raptors are definitely the favorites in a lot of people's eyes to come out of the East, although the Bucks are the one seed. It's kind of like the Warriors Rockets situation last year where the Rockets were the one seed, but the Warriors were the two. But I mean, we expected the Warriors to come out of the West. So I guess with that being said, since we just mentioned the Rockets, number one, of all of our lists, I think, is the Houston Rockets. I'll just mention something real quick. I'll let Big Red take the helm on this because this is his favorite team. But even when the Rockets were fighting for a playoff spot and James Harden was dropping 40, 50 every night, I was saying that a healthy Houston Rockets team is still the biggest threat to the Golden State Warriors because of how well they've played them and all that. So back when it looked like the Rockets could have ended up as an 8 seed, I was really interested in that, seeing a healthy Rockets team and face a Warriors team in the first round. So I guess with that being said, am I caught up in the hype of the recent winning? Tiny bit, but like I said, I've been kind of on the Rockets train since last year after seeing how close they got to beating the Warriors.
Yeah, and okay. So, I mean, I'll just build right into it. Rockets number one on all of our lists. Like you said, a healthy CP3 away from being in the finals last year. I mean, it's obviously he got hurt before game 6 and 7, so we don't necessarily know how those would have played out. But the Rockets held big leads in both those games and couldn't hold on to him, mainly because of that loss of shooting and defense from CP3. And so the Rockets kind of sitting dead in the water a few months ago, and it was I'm looking at this team with Harden putting up numbers and numbers. I'm like, okay, well, we don't really have a shot for beating the Warriors, but at least Harden can hopefully get that back-to-back MVP. That'd be tight. And now here we are, and they get healthy. They didn't do a whole lot at the trade deadline besides trim cap space. So I was kind of disappointed. They picked up Iman Shumpert. The buyout market has been big for them, though, with Austin Rivers and Kenneth Faried. And so you look at him, I wasn't super big on it. I mean, they were still going to be a playoff team. I mean, they were kind of sitting around 5-6 seed. They vaulted all the way up to the 3 seed, tied with the Thunder right now. They're 42-26, just had that 9-game winning streak snapped, 106-104 by the Warriors themselves last night. But we're not going to let a whole lot of that play into it. The Rockets are 7-1, I think, or 7-6-2 against the Warriors in the last two seasons in the regular season, so not, it doesn't play a huge factor, but it contributes when you look up the matchups of these teams. And we saw them last year. I mean, it seems like every time the Warriors play a team that gives them run, it's the Rockets, just their offense, their players, and their playmaking ability is what has been kind of the biggest kryptonite to the Warriors. They've been the only team that's really pushed them, besides obviously LeBron when he beat them. But I mean, that was pre-KD, and post-KD, LeBron got spanked. So the Rockets have the mold and fit for it. And the big kind of question, especially after a slow start, was, oh, their defense isn't as good. They lost Trevor Ariza and Mbam Mute. Well, now they've added Shumpert and Faried and Austin Rivers and filled those minutes. And in my opinion, maybe not regular. Like, obviously, they're different areas. Trevor Ariza is a small forward that the Rockets like to put on the other team's best offensive player, or maybe a second option with P.J. Tucker being an elite defender for the Rockets. But I would like to say that those guys have a bigger impact. I mean, it's the big thing for me here is now the Rockets are back up in the 3-seed conversation with another hot stretch. They could even take the Nuggets for that 2-seed, and then we're looking at a 1-2 seed again here, just the Rockets kind of more probably in their rightful place as the 2-seed. And so it's exciting with them getting going. I'm been bought into James Harden all year. I think he's a phenomenal player. I mentioned it earlier. I think he's one of the only players in the league that can be mentioned in the same breath as Kevin Durant in terms of a matchup with the Warriors. I mean, you got Giannis and Kawhi, another few guys that I would mention in there. But I mean, you go down the rest of the list, I'm not necessarily comparing anybody on any roster to a KD level talent, a team carrying level talent. And so if James Harden, we talked about this earlier in the season in general, and if James Harden can take this regular season MVP mode and be MVP in the playoffs, the Rockets have a huge, huge upside. And because it is the Rockets, I do have my most information on it. And the biggest, I think, question mark for people still is, oh, well, they lost Trevor Ariza and Mbam Mute. Those are two small forward minutes, guys with length that can defend and do a lot of things, based both shooting the basketball and playing defense. But the Rockets lost those guys, and they brought in other guys to replace them, like I mentioned, Faried, Rivers, and Iman Shumpert. And I don't necessarily think any one of them are better than Ariza or making a bigger defensive impact. But I'd like to point out these numbers from the Western Conference Finals last year. Trevor Ariza, 7-game starts, played 259 minutes, second most on the team. Shot 33% from the field and 20% from three. 20%. He was a part of the 27 missed threes in game 6, I believe. Maybe game 7.
Yeah, that was 7.
7, yeah. So he was a part of that.
But he was, he was 12 of that, actually, I think. He was 0 for 12.
Yeah. I mean, when you're shooting 20% from the field from three for a dude that basically just hucks up threes and plays defense, not a good look. Especially second most minutes on your team. I mean, that's basically saying 259 minutes of the time out there, Trevor Ariza is barely making an offensive impact, which is not to diminish his defense, but still, he was aging. I don't think the Rockets have lost all that much with losing Ariza. And Mbam Mute, even less of an impact. Played 54 minutes and 13% from the field, 20% from three. Dude hurt his shoulder late in the year, basically couldn't make a layup, was essentially unplayable because you put him on the court and he couldn't score. He couldn't play basketball at a normal level. And so, I mean, the two big guys that they lost that everybody's complaining and talking about, I really didn't have that much of an impact last year. If anything, it was a negative impact. And so I look at the Rockets roster now, and if you get a healthy Chris Paul playing at elite level, this is hands down the best team, the team that has the best shot at beating the Warriors, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, James Harden obviously is a guy that can get him there. The Bleacher Report came out of the thing, I don't know if you guys saw it, that said he could go scoreless for the rest of the season and still average 28.6 a game. Yeah. I mean, that's just, those numbers are unreal, you know?
Yeah, and that would lead the league still at 28.
Yeah,
exactly. And I just think that if he and Chris Paul, you know, play similar to the way they did, like you said before, Chris Paul got hurt last year, I think that there's no question they have the best shot at challenging the Warriors. To me, going into it, I would have said that Trevor Ariza was a tough loss. He's a great matchup for a guy like KD.
True.
But after hearing those offensive stats, I do understand him not, you know, them not losing as much by not having him. But that being said, I think that they need to win it early. Cause if they take it to seven, it's going to be hard for them to close out the way the Warriors can and always do. So I think for the Rockets, they got to, you know, put it on early and put it on often, in order to get by the Warriors.
Yeah, for sure. I get the one thing I'll address Trevor Ariza and Luke Bonamute, like the losses. I kind of think those are overblown for sure, because I mean, they are hyped up for their defense, rightfully so. They're really good defenders, but at the same time, you're not going to check KD. KD's going to get his buckets. You may be able to slow him down and maybe limit him to 25, 27 maybe, but nobody's going to check KD. So I think definitely getting rid of that kind of, at least Trevor Ariza anyway, kind of losing that spotty shooting he had in the playoffs on that 0-12 from three in game seven. That's, I guess, addition by subtraction, if you want to say. And I think a huge kind of wild card is Kenneth Fareed and the Kenneth Fareed-Clint Capella kind of duo, because the Warriors, they have Draymond Green, but DeMarcus Cousins isn't a defender. Last year they had JaVale McGee, who was a pretty good. He's a rim protector. He's a really good defender. Not, I want to say really good, but he's a good rim protector. He can defend the rim and the paint and stuff. But Boogie isn't that. He's an offensive center. He's not gonna block three shots a game, two shots a game. So it's kind of like Clint Capella becomes more of a scoring factor, if you want to say. And then if you want to throw Draymond on him, which I don't know if you would because of how much bigger Clint is than him, then that leaves Kenneth Fareed open. And I mean, he's had a renaissance in his career in Houston. So, and he's out here shooting threes from occasion too. So
yeah, dude, he's shooting like 40+ yeah. percent too.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a new look in the front court anyway. So I think that does create a mismatch in the Rockets' favor, which is crazy to say that the Warriors are on the not beneficiary end of a mismatch. So, I think the biggest question mark for the Rockets in this series is James Harden. Is he going to show up or is he going to fold? I mean, he folded last year, straight up. He folded. He choked, I guess, but he wasn't there when the team needed him, and that's definitely the biggest question mark. I hope he shows up. Definitely kind of killed my James Harden buzz last year when he didn't show up, because I am a Harden fan, but definitely can't go out there and support him on the TL anymore until he shows up in the playoffs, and especially against the Warriors.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think it was a little bit of wearing down, especially when you don't have your superstar sidekick who went out. I think Chris Paul's health is the biggest factor, even more so than James Harden playing at an MVP level, because I think Chris Paul can make up for Harden kind of maybe not showing up. But of course, we want to see him show up. We want to see everyone at their best in the playoffs. And I want to see James Harden just go another level in the playoffs and basically just assert himself. Like, I believe I'm the best player in the league and I'm going to play like it in the playoffs when it matters. So definitely big, big things to look forward to all around the playoffs, Western and Eastern Conference. Last thing I'll say is I like that you shouted out the DeMarcus Cousins matchup. And I think, honestly, adding DeMarcus Cousins, like you said, gives the Rockets a matchup advantage just because Clint Capella can go in there and lock down, anchor the defense, something that DeMarcus Cousins isn't known for doing and can't really do coming off an Achilles. And we'll see how it plays out in the playoffs, but it's definitely an opportunity for the Rockets to take advantage of probably being the only team in the league that may have an advantage on the Warriors' vaunted death lineup of five. So
yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting seeing Boogie versus Clint Capella because they're pretty much polar opposites. Like I said, Boogie's offensive, Clint's defensive. Boogie can jump maybe a half inch off the ground, especially now with the Achilles injury, and Clint Capella can fly and run and do all this stuff. So I mean, that's going to be really interesting. It's definitely probably the third storyline going into this. Obviously, number two is Chris Paul's health, and number one is if James Harden's going to show up. One thing I will say is we kind of need to kill the Chris Paul not showing up in the playoffs narrative. He choked once, I would say, against OKC when he was with the Clippers, but every other year he's been the best player on his team. He showed out, and if he wasn't showing out, he was hurt. So Chris Paul's definitely, he's a really good playoff player, and if he's healthy, then the Rockets have a really good chance.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that wraps up everything. Big Red's got to dip pretty quick. Got to get to class here. Starts in 6 minutes. So, Big Red signing off. Thanks for joining us, Cam.
Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. And I look forward to the next one.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you on again, Cam. Average answer.
All right.